From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
In the news today, again, the coronavirus getting the bulk of the attention of the media in the West and around the world. In Russia, President Vladimir Putin held a televised address on the pandemic in Moscow on Thursday, announcing an extension of the emergency that had been declared originally. It will now run to the end of April. The total number of cases in Russia rose to 3,548 on Thursday, with 30 people having died from the virus, according to official figures. This was President Putin on Thursday addressing the Russian nation.
Friends, my fellow Russians, the week that I early announced as the non-working week is coming to an end. This is a very tense schedule that we're seeing doctors, nurses still working, all the medical staff of health institutions. They're all struggling. That's the staff in infectious wards and every hospital. They are on the front line. They're treating and saving people. And they prevent, do a lot of prevention. And I'm sure that all of the Russians would appreciate what they're doing. And there are other industries that are working hard. I would like to sincerely thank all of you without any exception. And I'd like to say thank you to the volunteers, all the people who are not indifferent, who know that they can do their part, those who have followed all the guidelines from medical specialists, who take care of the health of their relatives and their surroundings. The non-working week that was introduced across the country and self-isolation regime for many regions have bought us time for a lot of preventive action to mobilize all the authorities and bodies to ramp up resources in our healthcare system to fight the pandemic in the most efficient way, using our own experience and the best practices from other countries. Now, what is critically important,
overall,
so far, we have taken care of the elderly. We have not seen any outbreak of epidemics in educational establishments, in preschool facilities or universities and schools. But what's next? I'd like to emphasize that when we take further action, we still need to be aware that the threat is still over, as specialists say, the peak of the epidemic is not yet over. This is why I have taken the decision to extend the non-working time until the end of the month, until the 30th of April, and that's a paid leave. The workers will still get their salaries. The situation is changing. In a lot of municipalities, in a lot of regions, the situation varies. We have a very huge country, vast territories, different density of population, and there are regions where coronavirus has created serious threat for the people. Take Moscow. Despite the actions of the federal authorities, the city hall, we have not reversed the trend. And there are regions, fewer and fewer regions, unfortunately, where we haven't seen a single case of COVID-19. So somewhere we need to take more severe action, while elsewhere remaining alert, local targeted action would suffice. This is why heads of Russian regions at my direction will get additional powers. By the end of the week, they will have to identify specific sets of preventive action, region-specific measures to take care of the health and safety of the people and also the sustainability of the economy and the critical infrastructure. Now, I would like to reiterate that, once again, the regions need to take stock of the reality on the ground and take an appropriate decision on the isolation regime, what kind of local action they would take to comply with the decree of the Russian president, which institutions and bodies and factories need to stop and which can continue to go on providing for the safety of the people.
Будут работать Just органы like власти, before, предприятия с непрерывным производством, медицинские учреждения и аптеки, магазины, товаров первой необходимости, все службы жизнеобеспечения. В том случае, если возникнет необходимость дополнительных ограничений для системообразующих предприятий, а также для образовательных, научных организаций,
то регионы будут обязаны
с федеральным правительством.
In case of any plants or factories, the regions will have to get approval from the federal authorities. We need to work hand in hand, both at the federal, regional, and municipal level. And this is why I asked all of my assistants in the regions to coordinate the activities. We all need to get the information to the coordination committee at the government. It will be processed, analyzed, and taken into account in the decision-making process. And the actions of the regional authorities will need to be definitely coordinated with our health care authorities. We need to take care of the safety and health of the people. That's our priority number one. Given the If we see any future developments, we might take further action. We will adjust the number of days that we need to stay in isolation. Perhaps we can roll it back. So there will be fewer days when we stayed on paid leave. Now, once again, as we implement these measures, we need to remember that it's as important today to keep our jobs and the livelihoods of our people. That's our general priority for the government, for the region, for the business community. We need to provide for an efficient, stable economy. That's the foundation that will help us to resolve the key challenges we're facing, particularly in healthcare. My fellow Russians, I'd like to ask you to continue to follow the guidelines of the doctors and the authorities. Take care of your health and the health of your relatives. Our shared responsibility and mutual support is increasingly important. This was a short time, just 1 week, but we saw that when we realize the importance, the threat, we can mitigate the risks. I'm certain that we'll continue to act as concerted as before. And we need to take preventive action. We need to get one step ahead of the virus. I wish you all the best and good health. Take care.
Meanwhile, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg held a media briefing in Brussels on Thursday at the close of the NATO foreign ministers meeting that was held via teleconference. This was Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg in Brussels on Thursday.
Good evening. NATO foreign ministers have just met for the first time via secure video conference, and it was a successful meeting, proving that NATO is able to adapt to the circumstances created by the COVID-19 crisis. We addressed a number of different issues, including our missions in Afghanistan and Iraq, and our support for Georgia and Ukraine. But our response to the COVID-19 was at the top of our agenda. We have agreed a joint declaration. We express our deepest sympathies with all the victims and with all those affected. We pay tribute to the healthcare workers and all those who are on the front line in our battle against the disease. This includes the men and women in uniform who continue to work daily for our collective security. NATO was created to deal with crisis so we can help. And our alliance is playing its part. Today, we decided to direct our top commander, General Walters, to coordinate the necessary military support to combat the crisis, to speed up and step up assistance. For instance, by identifying the airlift capacity to ensure that medical supplies are delivered, coordinating on any surplus capacity or stocks, and better matching requests from for support with offers from allies and partners. He will also implement simplified procedures for rapid air mobility in coordination with Eurocontrol, using the NATO call sign for military relief flights. We will also convene a meeting of NATO defense ministers in mid-April to review the support we are providing to allies, take decisions on any further steps, and start assessing the medium and long-term implications for our resilience, the continuity of our essential work, and the broader geostrategic picture. I'm grateful for the further offers of assistance which NATO allies made today, and for the substantial support that allies have already provided, including by airlifting critical medical supplies from across the globe, providing medical personnel and equipment, harnessing all our resources to deliver innovative responses, and ensuring transparent and timely information to overcome this global pandemic and to combat disinformation. While we focus on our common fight against COVID-19, we know that other threats and challenges have not gone away. NATO's primary responsibility is to deliver security and defense for almost 1 billion people. General Walters updated ministers on the state of our military preparedness. NATO's ability to conduct operations has not been undermined. Our forces remain ready, and our crucial work goes on, including in our multinational battle groups in the east of the alliance, NATO air policing, and our maritime deployments. NATO military medical staff remain vigilant, monitoring the impact for NATO troops deployed on operations. We continue to adapt to the COVID-19 crisis, but we also continue to plan, prepare, and act to maintain our security now and in the future. Today, ministers agreed on NATO's next steps to fight terrorism, build stability, and strengthen our partnerships across the Middle East and North Africa. Ministers agreed to enhance our training mission in Iraq, taking on some of the training activities of the Global Coalition, including the training and education of non-commissioned officers, engineers, and federal police. This is being done in full consultation with Iraqi authorities and the Global Coalition. Ministers also discussed what more we could do across the wider region. This includes more help to partners with reforms and capacity building, NATO-led exercises with a focus on fighting terrorism, and deepening our partnerships in the region, including with the African Union. We also discussed Afghanistan and our continued commitment to long-term peace and stability in the country. To support the peace efforts, we are reducing our presence to around 12,000 by the summer. No decision for further reduction has been taken, and all our steps will be conditions-based. We welcome efforts to set up an inclusive team for the inter-Afghan negotiations. We call on the Taliban and all potential actors to play their part. This includes reducing violence. This is the time for Afghans to show national unity in their national interests, to achieve peace in Afghanistan, but also to fight COVID-19. We decided to deepen our partnerships with Ukraine and Georgia even further, including with exercises in the strategic Black Sea region, as well as joint work to counter hybrid warfare, and efforts to share more air traffic radar data, making the skies safer for all. We also agree to increase NATO's cooperation with the United Nations, with a package of measures to help with UN peacekeeper training. This includes medical care, countering improvised explosive devices, and communications. And ministers formally launched the reflection process to further strengthen NATO's political role. It will lead, I will lead this process with the support of a group of experts. Finally, we welcome the foreign ministers of the Republic of North Macedonia, which is now a full member of the alliance. This is an important step forward for the stability of the Western Balkan region and of Europe. And it shows that in uncertain times, we must further strengthen our multilateral institutions. Global challenges demand global solutions. COVID-19 is making this clear. And as a transatlantic alliance, NATO is determined to continue playing its part. And with that, I'm ready to take your questions.
And the first question will go to Nick Fiorenza from Jane's Defence, who joins us from London.
Hello, Secretary General. Actually, I've escaped to Belgium to self-isolate. But in any case, you've addressed some of what I want to ask, but I'll ask another. Nevertheless, how does COVID-19 affect NATO's deterrence and collective defense capabilities to defend its eastern flank, the U.S. commitment to Europe and allied solidarity in general? And specifically, are the Baltic states in greater danger of Russian attack during the COVID-19 crisis?
All allies are focused on the consequences of the COVID-19 crisis and how to combat the COVID-19 crisis. And we discussed at the foreign ministerial meeting how we can step up and speed up the support of NATO to the civilian efforts to deal with the coronavirus and the consequences of the health crisis. At the same time, NATO's core responsibility is to make sure that this health crisis doesn't become a security crisis. And our core task is to continue to provide credible deterrence and defense in the midst of a health crisis. And that's exactly what we are doing. So we continue our missions and operations. We maintain our operational readiness. We continue to patrol the skies with air policing. Our naval deployments are maintained. And our battle groups in the eastern part of the alliance are up and running, as are our missions and operations elsewhere, like, for instance, our efforts to fight terrorism in Afghanistan and other places. So NATO is functioning, NATO is working despite the COVID-19 crisis. Of course, some of our personnel are affected. Some have contracted the coronavirus, but the missions, the operations, the readiness of NATO continues because NATO was created to deal with crisis. We have long experiences and many plans and a command structure which is developed and trained and tested to deal with the crisis. This is also, of course, the case for the Baltic countries, where we maintain our presence, air policing, the battle groups, where we also have, of course, the ability to reinforce if needed. We have seen the Russian military presence close to our borders, so we recently saw a snap exercise in the western and central military district. We have seen significant Russian naval presence in the North Sea. So, of course, we follow, we intercept flights, we follow military movements as we always do, and we continue to 24/7 provide credible deterrence and defense also in the midst of the coronavirus crisis.
The next question goes to Radu Tudor from Antena 3 in Bucharest, Romania. Radu, we can't hear you. Ask your question again. Okay, we'll go to the next journalist on the line and then we'll try to go back to Bucharest after that. So we'll go to Gül Sonomut from NTV Turkey.
Secretary General, good evening. So my question is, at Warsaw Summit in 2016, leaders were very premonitory since they have committed to enhance resilience of the alliance. And to enhance resilience, there are 7 baselines requirement. One of them is being able to deal with mass casualties. So my question is, did you discuss this issue? Normally in 2020, you were supposed to release the third report on the state of civil preparedness of member states. When will you publish this report? And particularly, will you resume the CEPSI, Civil Emergency Planning Committee work, since a lot of EU NATO allies were not very much willing to do so? And you have discussed this issue of reflection process. Will you ask from member state to have more power in order, in the framework of Article 3, to go and be able to verify that each member state is ready for civil preparedness, if there are shortcomings, that they're ready to fill the gap? Thank you.
The coronavirus crisis has reminded us all of the importance of resilience. Because this is about protecting our societies against different threats, different crises. And that's also the reason why actually NATO has a core task or a main responsibility to ensure resilience. It's enshrined in Article 3 of our founding treaty, the Washington Treaty, states clearly that allies are responsible for resilience of their societies, to be more able to deal with crisis, security crisis, but also other crises. And this is also very much in our modern societies intertwined. Therefore, we have updated our resilience guidelines, and it proves the importance of these guidelines, the basic requirements, on issues like healthcare, dealing with mass casualties, as you mentioned, but also infrastructure, the ability to move, also to have a transportation infrastructure in place, also in times of a crisis, communications, decision making, and many other areas. I think that, all allies and NATO is now focused on how can we deal with the consequences, how can we fight the COVID-19 crisis. At the same time, we all understand that we also have to start looking into the long-term consequences, the lessons learned, and how can we all be better prepared for the next crisis, because there will be a new crisis. And I think it's obvious that allies have some homework to do. We have, as alliance, to go through our guidelines for resilience. We have to improve resilience, and we have to learn lessons from this crisis to be better prepared for the next crisis. Then the reflection process may actually, of course, address how we also can strengthen NATO's political ability to prepare to prepare for crisis, to prevent crisis, and deal with crisis when they happen. The Civil Emergency Planning Group is already working, so we are dealing with these issues already. The main focus is to combat the COVID-19 crisis, the coronavirus, help assist the civilian efforts. We have to understand that at the time there will also be a time for drawing the right lessons and strengthening our resilience against the crisis.
Thank you. We now go to Mustafa Sawa from Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty in Prague.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Secretary General. I have two questions for you. You know that the Islamic State group has taken responsibility for the recent high-profile attack on the Sikh minority community in Kabul. So how can the Taliban give monitorable and verifiable guarantees that no terrorist group would use the Afghan soil against NATO and US interests in the future, and that thousands of prisoners of the Taliban, if freed all, will not return to the battlefield against the Afghan and international forces? The second question is, what's your message to the Afghan leaders, namely President Ghani and his political rival Abdullah Abdullah, to do at this pivotal juncture? And what's NATO's long-term commitment towards Afghanistan? Thank you very much, sir.
NATO and NATO allies remain committed to Afghanistan, and we have stated clearly that we will continue to provide support. We will continue our train, assist and advice mission, and we will continue with the funding for the Afghan forces. At the same time, we have stated clearly that the aim for NATO is not to stay in Afghanistan forever. The aim for NATO is to create the conditions for lasting peace, for stability in Afghanistan. And therefore, we strongly support the peace efforts. We welcome the agreement between Taliban and the United States. I was in Kabul when the agreement was signed in Doha, and we also had a declaration from Kabul, and all NATO allies support these efforts strongly. Knowing that this will be a hard and long and difficult way towards peace. Knowing also that the best way for NATO to support the peace efforts is to remain committed with our presence in Afghanistan, because by doing so, we are sending a clear message to Taliban and to any other adversary that they will not win on the battlefield. They have to sit down and make real compromises at the negotiating table. And one of the main tasks, one of the most important achievements with a deal between the United States and Taliban was that they actually agreed to initiate inter-Afghan negotiations. This is something the Taliban has rejected for a long time. And Taliban also agreed to denounce, to break all ties with terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda. Then we have to make sure that this agreement is implemented. That's the reason also why we have stated clearly that our any reduction of our presence in Afghanistan will be conditions-based. And that's also the reason why we have made it clear that even with a new force level of roughly 12,000, also going from 16,000, the current number of troops in the NATO mission in Afghanistan, down to 12,000, which is what we foresee by the summer as part of the peace efforts. With that level of troops, we can continue training. And actually, not many years ago, we had roughly 12,000 troops, roughly the same level of troops conducting the same mission for the Afghans. So we have to see progress. We have to see that Taliban is delivering. We have to see progress in the inter-Afghan negotiations to then gradually reduce our presence. It is conditions-based. But we believe that the only way to achieve peace in Afghanistan is to have an Afghan-owned process. The Afghans have to make peace in Afghanistan, and that's the reason why we support these efforts. We, of course, continue to call on all Afghan political figures to seize this moment and to overcome any differences and to stand united in also negotiating with the Taliban to try to find a lasting peace.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.